1 Corinthians, Paul says, "For we are God's fellow workers. You are God's field. You are God's building. According to the grace of God which was given to me, as a wise master builder, I have laid the foundation, and another builds upon it. But let each one take heed how he builds on it, for no other foundation can anyone lay than that which is laid, which is Jesus Christ." In this podcast, we explore those who went the wrong way. We examine how it happened, why it happened, and who it happened to. But most importantly, we always ask the question, could it happen to us? Thanks for joining us here on Faith, Frauds, and Falsehoods. Before we begin, we want to be clear, the opinions that we present are ours alone and do not necessarily represent the views or opinions of our respective churches or employers. Now, let's begin.
Okay, Brian, welcome back. We are back for another episode. Today, we're still talking about the Manson family. Yep. And we're going to cover the sociology of the Manson family in this episode.
Yeah, this is where things get interesting, right, is a good word for it. They had some weird social practices.
Weird social practices. Well, they were just a bunch of hippies, right?
Some people would say they fell into that group, and I think we talked in the history section where they probably didn't really feel like they themselves fit in that group, and a lot of hippies kicked them out. So,
yeah, I think they were seen as hippies, kind of the beatnik type people, but I think that other people who identify as that would not want to be identified as them.
Right.
That's very interesting because we talk about a lot of groups that identify as Christian. This group didn't necessarily. That identify as Christian, yeah. But we wouldn't want them to identify as Christian, you know?
Right. Yeah, I can think of quite a few.
So it's interesting how that works out. So one of the things we talked about starting with was the big prevalent thing in the family was drug use.
Yes.
They were pretty big drug users. Some people will say they were light drug users. Depends on how you define light drug use.
I was going to say, I don't know anyone that would call them light drug users.
Well,
that was kind of their thing.
Let me explain that a little bit.
Okay. Yeah.
So they were known to smoke marijuana. Part of Charlie's rules were that you could smoke marijuana any point, anytime. It was no big deal at all. Smoke some marijuana.
Okay.
However, LSD was another drug that was very popular then and very popular with the group. Mm-hmm. And Charlie very much controlled the LSD.
Yes, very much.
Before we get into the LSD too much, I think it's important. I'm not going to cover the whole history of LSD, but it's important to know that in the beginning of the family, the beginning of their group, the Manson family, LSD was legal.
Right.
It was not an illegal substance, and there were people who were manufacturing it and distributing it and taking it, and it was a big hippie thing, especially the counterculture there in California.
Yeah.
Even when it was made illegal, it wasn't enforced very much that people were on LSD. Like, the government didn't really crack down on it. This is before the war on drugs.
Was that Reagan, Nancy Reagan, that kicked the war on drugs off?
I thought that was I Am Not a Crook, Nixon.
Oh, was it Nixon?
It might have been Reagan. I don't remember. Johnson was the war on poverty. All these horrible presidents declared war.
They did. They did.
If you're a president and you declare war, you probably suck.
I was going to say, you can assume from that what you will.
I mean, I can tell you how to think. It's okay. So, anyways, LSD. LSD was a hallucinogenic drug.
Yeah.
And it is a, like I say, it was originally legal and then they end up making it illegal, but it's a hallucinogenic drug. There was a guy who was very famously manufacturing LSD and distributing in Haight-Ashbury. And one of the reasons Haight-Ashbury was having so many young homeless people moving there was that they knew there was lots of free or low-priced LSD everywhere.
Right.
They came to do drugs. Mm-hmm. And what happened was what seemed like this happy-go-lucky, everybody's tripping and enlightening and expanding their mind. And the reality that actually happened was people were living homeless. Their bodies are rotting while they're high, laying on sidewalks to sleep.
Yeah.
That's the reality of drugs. It promises this great thing. And some people seem to get that, but then the reality is that people don't get that.
Right.
And as we know, we've known people who have struggled with drug addiction and it's destroyed their lives, you know?
Yeah.
We could probably do a whole episode on demonology and drugs.
Yeah, absolutely.
And this kind of plays into that. So my point was there was lots of LSD around and it was pretty low cost.
Mm-hmm.
One of the things that the family struggled with as they were trying to gather money, see, they were never rich. A lot of these cults we talk about had their members go out and work and gained a lot of wealth. The Manson family never did have a lot of wealth. They stole some stuff. They will get to the stealing. They did some actual working. They did a little prostitution. But even with all that, they were barely eating. They literally ate out of dumpsters most of the time. We'll get more into that. But they always had a steady supply of drugs. Like I said, marijuana was around all the time. No big deal to do that. But LSD was controlled. The family would have group tripping sessions.
Mm-hmm.
And they would, as a group, maybe daily, maybe on a pretty periodic schedule, would get together and take marijuana. Charlie would always administer it, so he knew who got how much.
Mm-hmm.
They're known that one of the murders they committed, they got somebody high on marijuana and then chopped them up. Not marijuana, on LSD, and then chopped them up.
Yeah.
And then... But often, it was a pretty peaceful thing. Charlie would administer the LSD, and then he'd start preaching.
Mm-hmm.
Again, it's a hallucinogenic drug, so you know what's happening, but you don't know what's happening. And so that's when he would decide to start preaching to them. And you were telling me a little tidbit about how the LSD was administered.
Yeah, one of the books that I was reading, I don't remember if it was Bugliosi or Jeff Gwynn, one of them, one of the ex-family members, right, that talked to whoever the author was telling them that he was part of the group that was handing out the LSD, and every single time, Manson took significantly less than everybody else, right? And his point to that was this was the time that Charlie was lucid while everyone else wasn't.
Mm-hmm.
And he could implant thoughts and ideas in their heads, knowing full well what he was doing and manipulating these people while they were on this hallucinogenic drug trip.
So listen, drugs are bad, boys and girls, okay?
Yes.
If you choose to get high, then you're susceptible to other people controlling you.
Right.
Probably why I never got into that. I'm a bit of a control freak myself. And I don't like the idea of other people having control over me. And, you know, we talk about that with these cults. There's other things that can control you, too. And these cults, often the cult leaders use some sort of mind control type thing. Drugs can be used for that sort of thing. So can, group think type experiments where you get the group doing a certain thing. I don't want to say hypnotism. Yep.
Just like we talked about with Heaven's Gates, Hell's Flames, a lot of that emotional manipulation.
Yeah.
Right. Using key words and key phrases on a regular basis.
And stressing.
To lead people into a specific ideology, right? Over and over and over again. That's why, the echo chamber of Facebook or Twitter becomes so dangerous, right? Because you see the same things over and over and over again, and they compound on top of each other. You
start to believe it.
And become so much more than they originally were, right? You start to see only one side.
Well,
Jim Jones did it, right? Tony Alamo did it. The CSA did it, right? The whole thing was we repeat the same mantras over and over again, And that becomes ingrained in your noose, right? To use a Greek term.
Well, they also use, besides mental things, physical things to enhance the mental manipulation. So often, absolutely, Manson's people were hungry. They added a dumpster stuff, and sometimes they ate well, but a lot of times they ate whatever they got. So it might be onions and lettuce, or some old mushrooms, or some Little Debbie cakes, or whatever they found, right? No, literally.
Right.
Yep. And they also, this is another that manipulation. So during their eating practices, they would gather, and the women would have to go gather the food, often from the dumpsters of grocery stores. They would try to flirt with the grocery store people to get better food. But the women would have to come home and prepare the food, and all the men ate first. Charlie was always first, and then the rest of the men.
Mm-hmm.
All the men ate first until they were full. And then the women and children were allowed to eat. So, yeah, they were malnourished. And when you see the pictures of them, there weren't no fat ones. You know what I'm saying?
Right.
They were malnourished, and that contributes to that too. Same thing with the Heaven's Gates. Same thing eventually with the other one you referenced in California. He ended up in Guana.
Jones.
Even with Alamo, they regulated their food and
regulate
stuff.
The food.
Yep. And then the forced labor made them hungry. Manson did the same thing. When they lived out in the desert, he made them go out and search, and they were more hungrier then than ever.
Mm-hmm.
And that was right before they started the murders. He really got them at maximum control there by stressing them out physically, pushing them mentally. But, you know, it's funny. I've been listening to this podcast called The Line that discusses it's by Apple Podcasts. It discusses a Navy SEAL who was accused of murdering a terrorist. I know it seems like a weird thing, right? Accused of murdering a terrorist. And there's a whole long story to it and such. He was eventually proven guilty, but admitted he murdered him anyway and all this. Y'all can go listen to that one for that. But they talked about how the Navy SEALs are trained and tested. And it's very, very similar thing. In order for them to do that job that none of the rest of us want to do, honestly, or them to do horrific things, because horrific things have to be done, they have to be manipulated, and they're manipulated physically. They're pushed so far. They was talking about there's exercises they do where they're having to go underwater, and they're not allowed to surface until they achieve a certain objective. And there are guys who have literally killed themselves underwater, because they refused to surface, even though their body was screaming, "You have to breathe, you have to breathe." Their mission was to not surface till they were finished, so they just literally did it till they died. And that's the devotion that a Marine, a SEALs particularly, has to have.
Right.
And this is a very similar thing. I'm not calling SEALs, you know, cult people, but I'm saying it's that same sort of tactics that are used. People can achieve things they never would achieve if they're pushed. Like that. So drugs was used as part of that. Another thing I think we ought to mention with the drugs is that Charlie had a ban on what most people would consider harder drugs. A lot of people wouldn't consider marijuana and LSD to be hard drugs.
Right.
Although I think marijuana is a pretty popular drug. It's legal in a lot of states now. Maybe a majority of states now.
I don't know if it's quite a majority,
but a lot of places.
Pretty close. Yeah.
If not medically, if not recreationally, at least medically.
Yeah.
LSD. So listen, I've heard about marijuana a lot. Never done marijuana. Don't plan on doing marijuana. But I've not heard a whole lot about LSD besides, the hippies used to do LSD. I assume it's still around, but I don't know that it's super popular. But I don't really have my thumb on what the drug culture is.
I don't know. I think the psilocybin kind of took the place of LSD.
Never heard of psilocybin.
We hear about the psilocybin in Oregon or Washington, whichever state just recently allowed it for recreational use. It's another hallucinogenic drug compound that's just pretty similar, but it's much more common because it's a naturally occurring chemical in mushrooms.
Oh, okay. Mushrooms. Yeah, I have heard about mushrooms.
You've heard of shrooms.
Yes, yeah. And that's become more and more popular. Mm-hmm. I know that, you know, we both come from, you know, meth capital of the world. It's actually not even the meth right. capital of the world. It just seems that way.
Sure seems like it.
And I know we've probably both, I know I have, and I'm assuming you have too, known meth users, known people who have struggled with it and come across it, you know?
Yep.
And that is a thing that Charlie wouldn't allow. He was against the harder drugs. So he didn't like meth and heroin and things like that. However, is it Gwynn? I thought it was Gunn was the guy's last name, the author.
It's Guinn.
Okay.
So,
well, he mentions that
he might pronounce it Gunn, but it's spelled Gwynn.
He mentions that Tex and Susan had some harder drugs they got from the biker gang, and that they kept a secret stash. He mentioned specifically that Susan says, and maybe even Tex admitted to it too, that both of them got high both times before they went out murdering people on the harder drugs, on specifically the speed or the meth.
Right.
Doing that, and that it would cause them to have, you know, meth mouth. It would cause them to be much more edgy instead of being chilled out like pot would. It caused them to be, you know.
Right. That typical meth reaction.
Yeah. And that they would do that. It also helped them whenever they were doing things like searching for the hole in the ground and all that, because they could stay up for days on end.
Right.
But that they kept that secret from Charlie. It's funny, they had this extreme devotion, but yet still, you know, literally we kill for the guy, but still kept things secret from him.
Yeah. Yeah, and that's, you know, I think that's a big part of that is because of, I assume the next point that you're wanting to make is the threat and actual acts of violence that were done. You know, there were, I think we mentioned it on the history episode. Yeah, there were people that were afraid of Charlie, right? Because he would just attack them, physically choke them, strangle them, beat them until they submitted.
Yeah, Tex mentions that Charlie would, especially when they were doing LSD, but other times would attack him and jump on him and choke him, and he would not stop choking until Tex just, he learned the only way to survive it was to just go limp and submit to whatever Charlie wanted. If Charlie punched him, you just took the punch. You just take it. He wanted that extreme submission without saying it. On the other hand, while we're talking about weird behaviors like that from Charlie, another thing he was known for is there was one girl that he had convinced at 14 to run away from home with him. And later he had a run-in with her daddy, and her daddy put a gun to his head.
Yeah.
And he's like, you know, if you want to do this, pull the trigger. And the guy ended up not pulling the trigger. Not only the guy ended up not pulling the trigger, he later came to Charlie because Charlie had drugs and women that he would share sexual favors from. And women that included his daughter, by the way. But and so he later came to Charlie trying to join the group. And Charlie then made fun of him and was like, ha, but used him for what they could get out of him. We mentioned about their money. So very often he didn't take everybody as a follower. He would often get people, try to get them to be a follower just because they had a credit card or a little bit of cash or a car that he'd get them to sign over. And once he got that from them, he'd take it.
Yep.
Let me tell you.
Whatever he can manipulate out of people and take it.
Reminds me of my father. He used to do this. He used to hoe around a lot, and he lived from girlfriend. And we'd be like, go see dad. And well, we don't know where dad lives. He lived with whatever girl he was with. Well, then he got a house because he had to have us move in with him, his kids. And so we didn't have any furniture in the house, and he wanted a TV. Instead of buying a TV, he called an old girlfriend he knew had a big TV, and he convinced her to move in the house. his plan that he told us ahead of time was right. that he was going to have her move in and then kick her out in a couple weeks. And she was too small, so she wouldn't be able to carry that big TV because it's one of the big, you know, 36-inch Sony Trinitron things.
Yeah.
And I remember because he was very upset whenever she moved out that she got the TV anyway. She was able to carry the TV because he told her, you can leave, but I'm not going to help you carry nothing. But he manipulated over and over to get cars and different things from these people.
Yeah.
From these women, these girls he would date. So I remember my dad, I guess I'm comparing my dad to Charles Manson here. He wasn't that bad.
It's good to say, that's
some similar behaviors there.
But that
manipulation.
Similar manipulation, con artisty kind of.
Oh yeah, I remember later in his life, him telling me about he's going to call this ex-girlfriend of his and see if she'd come live with him and help him because he was getting older and sicker. He couldn't see well enough to drive. He could work, but only remotely from home, which he was smart enough to figure that out before everybody worked from home. But he still needed somebody to drive him around and help take care of the house. And so he called this girlfriend he had dumped before. He's like, she's ugly, but she takes care of me. So I'm just going to convince her to do it. And she lived with him till he died.
Wow.
You know, I believe that woman probably loved him to death. I won't name her name. Not that she probably listened to this, but I'm sure she loved him. She was super nice and took very good care of my father. But he had no feelings for her, except for what he wanted to get out of her. You know?
Man.
It's craziness.
Well, that's quite the tangent from Manson.
Is it, though? Because he did the same thing. He took advantage of people. So he had this thing. So we talked about before the, what was the book? The how to win friends and influence people.
Yeah, something like that from Carnegie.
Yeah, he would use those things. There's a tale that says he met this one young woman. I say young woman; she was really a teenage girl. He brings her in the van, and basically just stares in her eyes, and talks to her in an authoritative voice, and tells her that. She's going to leave her family and start following him. And that's pretty much how he picked up followers. Some followers were smart enough to say, Charlie, you're full of crap.
Right.
And most of those followers, he'd be done with them. He didn't spend a lot of extra time on that. If he couldn't convince them within a conversation, he didn't keep trying. Now, a few of them, he wanted something else out of them. So he had a few people who were not followers, but friends of his who thought he was full of crap, but still thought he was interesting and were interested because of the other people that followed him. Mm-hmm. They wanted to take advantage of the girls. He was a pimp. Yeah,
like Dennis from the Beach Boys.
Yep, what was his name? Wilson.
Dennis Wilson. Yep.
Most significantly is the other name that I can't remember. That you said I'm losing the names. The one who got arrested first. They were trying to make copycat killings to get him out of jail.
Right.
So Charlie had actually taken a couple. He was similar to Charlie in that he had multiple girls, multiple girlfriends, but not quite as cultish as Charlie. He just was like, hey, you're going to be with me. Okay. And girls would kind of come and go. They were allowed to go. Yeah. And yet he lost a couple girls to Charlie, but he liked to go hang out with Charlie because he could, you know, sleep with the other girls there. And he started doing favors for Charlie.
Mm-hmm.
They started dealing some drugs together. So Charlie got into the drug dealing business too with the biker gang and kind of ripped them off on some drug deals. But he was doing that trying to make some money. The Straight Saints. That was the biker gang, Straight Saints.
Yeah.
And he was trying to make some money. He never did make a whole lot of money. He had such a large group to take care of.
Right.
And they didn't really put them to work effectively. Day to day, they didn't do a whole lot of work.
Yeah, because they were too busy sitting around high on LSD and doing other things.
Exactly. Exactly.
And eventually murdering people.
Exactly. So we got about 10 more minutes left in our time allotment for the sociology here. What else did we want to go over?
Well, you know, the other thing that he used a lot on that manipulation side was sex. Yeah, that was his thing, right? He used it everywhere. Anyone that he could manipulate in any sort of way, if they didn't submit because of drugs or because of violence, they did because of the sex.
The oldest profession.
And it just, one of the things I was reading was these big group sessions, right? We'll use that word. And people didn't pick who they got partnered up with, right? Charlie controlled that.
Yep, he's in control of all of it.
He was in control of every moment of that situation. And if he knew certain people had qualms or issues with certain things, he specifically paired them up with someone to break that.
Well, and that was true of his followers. Now, his friends...
Trying to avoid saying things.
Right, we don't get it marked explicit. Right. That was true of his followers and of his friends. If he knew his friend so-and-so, who he was trying to get a recording contract from, liked Sadie, and would always pick Sadie as the girl he wanted, because remember, he was basically a pimp. But if he was mad at his friend, he would say, well, you can't have Sadie, but you could have Susan.
Right.
That was the other thing. A few of the girls he got because they were willing to follow. A few of the girls he got because he was trying to find prettier girls. Like, he rated them.
Mm-hmm.
He would even rate them in front of each other in order to tear them down. He was always big about getting rid of your ego, which was kind of a hippie thing. Give up your ego, man. Give up your ego. But in his convoluted world, giving up your ego really meant follow Charlie. Do what Charlie says.
Right.
You know?
Yep.
So, yeah, that was a big part of manipulation he used with lots of things. With the police, with the bikers, with everybody. Even in court, he tried to use that.
Mm-hmm.
He tried to use that same manipulation. And then the other thing for the manipulation is that what we talked about before, the insane game, he called it.
Yeah.
Just acting crazy. So we mentioned about his acts of violence. On the other side of the acts of violence is the acts of love. He would do crazy things for people. I don't know if it's an act of love or just an extreme devotion or extreme loving type thing. So one time he was on the beach and he was talking to a record executive and some of his girls, and they were flirting and stuff. And he ran across some of the people on the beach and he starts preaching to them about this giving up your ego and giving up your things.
Mm-hmm.
And this guy who he doesn't know is like, well, you got this bus over here. This is when they were traveling around their bus. You got this nice bus over here. It's all decked out. And you're telling us to give up things. Why don't you give up your bus? And he tosses the guy the keys.
Right.
That's all the family owns. They don't have a place to stay. Everything they own's on that bus. He tosses the guy the keys. The guy takes the bus and leaves.
Yep.
They hang out on the beach, and Charlie's not worried. Other people are worried about what's going to happen and all this. Charlie's just hanging out on the beach. A few hours later, the guy shows back up with the bus and says, hey, I can't take your bus. I guess you are the real deal.
Yeah. You know, I don't know how much of that falls into showing of a real belief in what he's saying versus how much of it was more manipulation.
Oh, it was extreme manipulation.
Right.
Those followers that were with him that day, they were even more sold. The person who told the story about this was the record exec who didn't sign him for a record, but still thought that Charlie should have a movie made about him.
Mm-hmm.
Still pushed for him. The same person who later on, when Charlie was in prison, decided to go ahead and get his record made. So yes, folks, you can buy Charlie Manson's album. Yeah. It is on Apple Music. You can listen to it. It sucks, but you can listen to it.
Now, is that because you're comparing it to
real music? Yes.
Good music?
Yes. And it's funny because I think I talked about this in a previous episode. It drives me nuts, or maybe I just told you about it. It drives me nuts when we read some of these books about these cult leaders where, like, it seems like the author of the book wants to insult the cult leader.
Right.
Just to insult them. And I'm not trying to do that there. The music really isn't that great, y'all. I would say it's not my style of music, but I like some hippie style music. I don't feel like it's very great music. I think a lot of people thought the same, where he'd have much better record sales.
Mm-hmm.
Even with the morbid curiosity of him, it didn't go and get super popular. And look, we could say, well, people don't want to buy music from a mass murderer, but they buy Marilyn Manson stuff all the time. That guy's a sadistic rapist who, I don't think he's killed any women that we've proven yet, but he statistically rapes them and does all kinds of horrible things to them, and yet people buy his music all the time. So I think if his music were any good, it would sold.
Right.
We can do another episode on Marilyn Manson later.
Oh, yeah.
More stuff is coming to light on that dude. I don't know why people are surprised by it. Like, he's told us he's a horrible person, but nobody believed him, apparently.
Yep. Thought it was just an act.
Yeah. Like the family that let their 16-year-old girl go on tour with him. Not because she was talented, just to sit on his bus.
Right, as a groupie.
Yeah.
Well, hey, you know, I think, you know, our goal is 30 minutes. We just cracked the 30-minute mark. I don't know how much deeper we want to get into some of these pieces, but I think this gives everyone a good place to go and do some more digging, right? If you want to learn more about Manson and the things that he did, these are some key areas to go and look at.
Sure, I don't know that you want to learn anymore. He's pretty messed up.
Yeah.
But yeah, I think that covers the sociology side of it pretty well. So we'll go ahead and end this episode here. And till next time, I think we have one more episode in our
Manson. Yeah, we've got our new session, new episode type. I don't know what we're...
Yeah, we'll call them episodes.
Pieces. Yeah, well, but it's one episode split into four different pieces now.
Oh, our response.
We're talking about our response to Manson at this point. So we'll see you next week. Thank you for joining us here on Faith, Frauds, and Falsehoods. Don't forget that we have our website, faithfraudsfalsehoods.com, where we post a more detailed blog with references so that you can go and take a look at all of this information for yourself. Also, remember to share this with a friend and help us get the word out there for everyone else. We'll see you in the next one.